Support for Science Friday comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering advanced genomic testing that may reveal other treatment options for cancer patients. Learn more at cancercenter.com.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. 3 years ago, a 45-foot tsunami slammed into the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, wiping out the cooling systems, sending three of its reactors into meltdown. The disaster displaced 100,000 residents and prompted the Japanese government to take the country's remaining 48 nuclear power plants off the grid, and they haven't been turned back on since. What have they learned from the disaster? What about the other nuclear power plants with similar designs? What has been done to make them more damage resistant? How long is it going to take to clean up the radioactive mess in Japan? Let me introduce my guest. Eliza Strickland is an associate editor for the IEEE Spectrum here in New York City. She's made several trips to the area. She's here to give us an update. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira. Thanks for having me.
So what's going on there now? Where does it stand? Is it stable? Is it not? Are they always? What are they doing?
It's stable today, thanks
today.
To yes, thanks to constant vigilance. The reactor cores are shut down. The reactor, mm-hmm. The fission reaction is not happening, but to keep them in check, to keep the radioactive particles inside the reactors in check, you have to continue to pour water over the reactor cores constantly, day after day after day.
You know, I was thinking about that, having covered Three Mile Island myself, mm-hmm. having seen other nuclear reactor sort of mishaps. Mm-hmm. That's the thing; it's still very crude the way you have to control a reactor. Throwing water on it, right?
Yeah, that's the name of the game at this point. There are designs that people are talking about that would require less active safety measures, but those are sort of in the future right now.
So what happens to all that water? Does it flow out? Does it get contaminated and flow out into the ocean?
Well, that's the problem with Fukushima. There were these accidents during the first week of the. There were these explosions during the first week of the accident, mm-hmm. Which create a lot of breaches, a lot of leaks in the reactor vessels. So all that water you're pouring over the reactor cores is, in fact, leaking into the basements of the buildings, and from there out into the soil and eventually to the ocean.
Right.
So TEPCO, the owner of the plant, is doing what they can to capture this water. To capture it and treat it and store it. But that means they're building enormous farms of tanks. The whole hillsides are filling up with tanks to store this water.
Just to keep it, they can't do anything with it except put it in a tank.
Yeah. Well, they're treating it as best they can. They're working on a new and improved treatment system to get out the radioactive isotopes from mm-hmm. the water. And they can remove most of them, but they can't remove tritium, which is a radioactive isotope of hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
They've talked about releasing this water into the ocean. They say tritium is not a very dangerous substance, but the local people, the fishing industry, will not have it.
No.
So at the moment, they're just storing it ever increasing quantities.
What has happened to the water that has gotten out to the ocean? Has it spread around the world through the ocean currents?
It has, yeah. And so there's been a lot of hubbub on the internet recently. There's maps showing sort of waves of radioactive particles that are going to reach the coast of California in April. And there's a lot of alarm. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the problem is that the maps are like color-coded in alarming ways. It looks kind of like red and orange. You're like, oh God, it's all coming towards us.
Right.
These are minute quantities of radiation, far below, like 1,000 times below the safety threshold for drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount that's going to reach us in the U.S. is nothing to be concerned about. But right around the Fukushima plant, it is
right.
a serious concern.
And how long do you think it's going to take to clean it up? What do you have to do to mm-hmm. clean it up eventually?
Well, the plant itself, they think, will take about 40 years to decommission. And that's a long process because you first have to... you have to plug up all the leaks. You have to figure out exactly where the reactor cores are because they melted and they kind of melted through the reactor vessels. And it's so radioactive in there that you can't go look and see where the cores are.
They send robots in?
They're working on that. But they've had to build the robots. The industry was not ready for this accident. So they're really inventing the technology that's going to be necessary to decommission the plant as they go.
Do they eventually have to get that melted part out? The core of that has to come out?
Yeah, absolutely.
They have to figure that out, how to do that also.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And that's sort of the pledge that the government has made to the Japanese people that they're going to take this plant apart completely, you know, try and, as much as they can, sort of erase the disgrace from the landscape. Mm-hmm. So to take the core apart, you need to... you need to fill the reactor vessels all the way up with water to shield the cores to keep the radiation from affecting people. Mm-hmm. Then you need to lower these enormous drills down to break up these blobs of metal, and then lower down these enormous robotic arms, which can pick up the blobs and pack them into canisters underwater. And then those canisters go out and to some to-be-determined storage facility.
Now, there are other plants like this, and there are even some in the United States. Mm-hmm. Have they learned something now? Are they taking any other precautions to make sure something like this doesn't happen?
Yes, yes, indeed. Both in Japan and the U.S., all around the world, really. Japan has a new regulatory authority which has put new safety standards in place. These are things like seawalls to prevent further tsunamis. A lot of attention has been focused on backup power systems.
Yes, because the water took that out, right?
Exactly.
They thought they had a backup, but... Mm-hmm. They didn't.
Yeah, the problem with Fukushima Daiichi was the generators were at a low level. They're basically in the basements. And so they're now putting a lot more backup generators on high ground so that even if some monster tsunami comes, there's no way it can wipe out the power source.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because if you go to coastal cities and that don't have nuclear power plants, I'm thinking of, it was in Savannah, you know, and they run on the water. Mm-hmm. And I walked by a fire station, mm-hmm. you know. A fire station, there's a power plant, there is a generator three stories on stilts, mm-hmm. because they know these kinds of things are going to happen, but they mm-hmm. never predicted that kind of thing could happen
yeah.
in Fukushima.
Yeah, they said the scale of the tsunami was beyond their imagination.
Wow. Wow. How does the cleanup compare to, let's say, Chernobyl or Three Mile Island? Mm. Is it a different kind of cleanup, a much more difficult one that's going to happen?
Yeah, it's much more complicated. Chernobyl's interesting because they basically just entombed it. They just put a big concrete sarcophagus over it and put a big no-go zone around it and said, all right, right. that's going to be the situation for the foreseeable future. Three Mile Island, they did take out the reactor core. They did defuel it, as they say. It took a very long time, many decades. But Fukushima Daiichi, it's a much more complicated task. There's three meltdowns, and the buildings are shattered by explosions. So there's radioactive rubble everywhere. You can't even just get from one place to another. The buildings are so contaminated that people can't work in there. That's why they have to send these robots in, because it's too dangerous for human beings.
And this basically has shut down all of nuclear power in Japan, right? They're not...
Yeah. Yeah.
None are coming online. Has it done the same sort of soul searching in the rest of the world too?
To some degree, it's pretty interesting how it's broken out. In Europe, there was a lot of soul searching, and most obviously in Germany, where the chancellor decided to end the nuclear power program. That's a very dramatic change mm-hmm. for Germany. Elsewhere, there's been some more reevaluation. In the U.S., the NRC did go through a process of lessons learned and has some new regulations in place that the plants are in the process of coming up to code with. Plants around the U.S. are spending many millions of dollars to increase backup power sources, that kind of thing.
Do the Japanese at all even want them ever turned back on?
That is a great question. The Japanese situation is so interesting. They've had a series of elections. They elected a prime minister, then a legislature, and then Tokyo governor, all of who are decidedly pro-nuclear. They've elected these people resoundingly. And yet when you survey the Japanese people, they overwhelmingly say, 60-70% say they do not want nuclear power in their country anymore. So there's a real disjunction going on. The fact that the nuclear power plants are offline has taken a real economic toll on Japan, and I'm not sure people are going to be willing to pay that price.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Coming out with a Blue Ribbon Advisory Report. Mm-hmm. Have these things that they've suggested in the report been implemented? Are people going through that?
They're in the process of doing it, a lot of the plants tried to sort of get out ahead and start making the changes early on, and now they're sort of saying, look, we've already made these changes, we're already sort of up to code, but the NRC has to go through the process of agreeing that that's the case.
There's a lot of talk about a walk-away safe nuclear reactor. Mm-hmm. What are they coming online, or do they exist? What's the story with that?
Yeah, that's the next generation that I would really like to see around the world. Walk-away safe, passive safety systems. So these are the ideas that if the power goes out, that there's no action necessary, essentially, to keep a meltdown from happening. They'll just automatically begin to shut down. And these are actually beginning to be built. Westinghouse has a design, the AP1000, and that's there are four of those being built in the U.S., two in Georgia, two in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And China, interestingly, is building quite a lot of them. China's very interested in these next-generation nuclear designs.
Well, they need a lot of power fast, right? If they don't do nuclear, that coal is going to...
It'd
be very polluting.
Yeah, China has a very aggressive nuclear program.
And they have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because building a plant is very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes a while, and the Chinese could do that.
Yeah, yeah. And they also don't have to worry too much about, you know, people being upset about it. They can kind of just make it happen.
Yeah, well, that's true. What about there's something called small modular reactors.
Mm-hmm.
They're tiny in comparison and supposedly mm-hmm. much safer.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard a lot about them a few years ago, but you don't hear much about them now. Are they quietly coming on?
They're in the works. The Department of Energy has given some funding to develop these designs, but it's going to take a while. I mean, we don't even have, you know, sort of the licensing in place for these kind of new designs yet. With good reason, the nuclear industry is very slow to adopt changes. They're prioritizing safety, but it does mean that it takes a while for any technological development to get through.
How many times have you been to Japan, to Fukushima?
I think I've been to Japan four times now.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 6 weeks there last spring, including a week in Fukushima Prefecture, traveling around, visiting evacuated towns, meeting some of the refugees.
Mm. Still very sad.
It's tragic, yeah, yeah. About 100,000 people still out of their homes. And people just now coming to terms with the fact that they're never going, some of them will never go back to their homes in their lifetimes.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you, Eliza.
You're so welcome.
Eliza Strickland is associate editor for the IEEE Spectrum here in New York, and she made several trips to the area. And thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thanks, Ira.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's a radio rewind with Tim Berners-Lee as we celebrate 25 years of the web. And a look at where it's going next. Where would you like the web to go? You can give us a call. Our number 844-724-8255. What would you like to see the future of the web 25 years later? 25 years ago, as you'll hear from Tim Berners-Lee, no one really knew what the web would be like. How can you predict that? Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.